With the exception of the United States and Afghanistan, perhaps no country has been so profoundly influenced by the events of September 11th as Pakistan. NPR's Michael Sullivan reports from Pakistan's capital, Islamabad, on how that country has changed in the last 12 months.
A year ago, Pakistan was going nowhere in a hurry, weighed down by international sanctions imposed after its 1998 nuclear tests and General Pervez Musharraf's coup the following year. One of Pakistan's few friends, it seemed, was the Taliban. Conceived in part in Pakistan's madrasas, nurtured by its intelligence agencies, whose patronage had helped the Taliban win control of most of Afghanistan. But on September 11th, everything changed. General Musharraf, under enormous pressure from the U.S., threw his support behind the war on terror.
The carnage in New York and Washington has raised the struggle to a new level. I wish to assure President Bush and the United States government of our unstinted cooperation in the fight against terrorism.
In an instant, President Musharraf turned Pakistan's state policy 180 degrees, abandoning the Taliban, offering the U.S. intelligence and logistical support and the use of its airspace. General Musharraf was rehabilitated in the eyes of the West. Samina Ahmed heads the Islamabad office of the International Crisis Group.
All of a sudden, the military government that everybody else had been putting pressure on, the United States, European Union, the Commonwealth, withdrew that pressure. The military government became everybody's darling. Diplomatic support, money, everything, you know, it's like Father Christmas came to town for the military government.
New loans and restructuring of Pakistan's debt quickly followed, as did a visit by Musharraf to the U.S. But General Musharraf was making some new enemies as well. Pakistan's religious parties and their militant Islamic offshoots were furious with Musharraf for turning on the Taliban. These groups saw the Afghan militia as ideological and ethnic brothers and saw Musharraf's decision to side with the Americans against them as nothing short of treason. Long live the Taliban, death to America, down with Musharraf, were some of the cries from demonstrators in Pakistan's northwest frontier province and its tribal areas. Last fall's demonstrations fizzled out after a while, but the anger of the militant groups has not. For decades, Pakistan had used the militants as an instrument of state policy, first in the war against the Soviets, later in the ongoing proxy war against India in the disputed region of Kashmir. After September 11th, the extremist groups found themselves sidelined. And in January, Musharraf banned many of them outright. Ahsan Iqbal is chief coordinator for former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif's Pakistan Muslim League. He says he supports Musharraf's decision to side with the U.S. and ban the militants, but he says it's come at a heavy price.
Pakistan is facing some of the extreme threats and attacks like suicidal missions, which have never taken place here before, attacks on Christian missionaries or their churches or foreigners, and this is now destabilizing Pakistani society. So this is a cost which now Pakistan will have to bear for many years to come.
Many of those attacks have occurred in the port city of Karachi, home to more than 10 million people. The city is also Pakistan's commercial capital, but recent attacks against foreigners have dampened investor interest. So have reports that Al-Qaeda and homegrown militants are currently hiding in the city. The attacks began in January, after General Musharraf outlawed the militants. Later that month, Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl was kidnapped and murdered. In May, 11 French naval engineers were killed by a suicide bomber outside Karachi's Sheraton Hotel. And in June, the U.S. consulate in Karachi was the target of another car bomb. Though damage to the building was minimal, 12 people were killed, all Pakistani citizens.
You can say that the Pakistanis are paying the high price, that's true. Because the reason, you see, if there was no war on terror, no one would have been doing all this blast and everything.
Mohammad Riaz Warsi, an engineering student, was driving home on the afternoon the consulate was bombed. He remembers hearing an explosion as he drove to meet his sister and his uncle. Alia, his sister, was due to be married the next day.
when we came back around 3 o'clock after Friday prayers, so everyone who were in the house, my aunt and everyone, they told me that Alia and Mr. Shafaz is not back yet. From there, we went to civil hospital, so they told us that all the casualties have been taken to Jinnah. When we went to Jinnah, we found out that their name wasn't there. They told me to go to the mortuary and see it. When I reached in the mortuary, I saw the first body of my sister, Dr. Alia, and the second one was my uncle.
Mohammad Riaz Warsi says his sister and his uncle were victims of the war on terror, but he believes Pakistan has done the right thing in joining that war. Some Pakistanis, however, say the war on terror has also set back Pakistan's return to democratic rule. Just last week, General Musharraf announced nearly 24 constitutional amendments, one of which allows him to stay in power for 5 more years. Another gives him the right to dissolve parliament. And he has passed laws ensuring that the exiled leaders of Pakistan's 2 main political parties not be allowed back to contest the upcoming parliamentary elections. Farhatullah Babar is spokesman for Benazir Bhutto's Pakistan People's Party.
General Musharraf and the present military government has used and is using the opportunities provided by the post 11th September 2001 events, and they are using it to perpetuate themselves in power. And General Musharraf, knowing fully well that the international community needs him in their fight against terrorism, is using this to rig the elections, to keep the popular political leaders and parties out, and that is the negative part of this.
Samina Ahmed of the International Crisis Group says Pakistan's political space has been distorted by military rule, and that the West's unqualified support for President Musharraf post-9/11 is short-sighted. She says it's also potentially dangerous.
The only way to curb Islamic extremism in a country like Pakistan is to make sure that the mainstream political parties have sufficient space. They're moderate parties, they're pro-American, they're pro-Western, they're anti-militant. For the past 3 years, they haven't been allowed freedom of association at all. Freedom of movement, fundamental rights, no. All these secular freedoms, all these liberal and democratic freedoms are what keep Islamic extremists at bay. But 9/11 somehow changed international priorities, and perhaps it's about time that the international community reconsider those priorities to understand this is not an either-or situation.
Ahmed says the world must realize that to fight the war on terrorism, it's also important to support democracy in Pakistan. Michael Sullivan, NPR News, Islamabad.